This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
He was the second president of the United States. His name was John Adams, and on June 21st, 1776, John Adams made this statement. We may plan and speculate for liberty, but it is religion and morality alone which can establish the principles upon which freedom can securely stand. The only foundation of a free constitution is pure virtue, and if this cannot be inspired in our people in a greater measure than they have it now, they may change their rulers and the forms of government, but they will not obtain a lasting liberty. Wow. Virtue. Notice he said nothing about values. He said it was virtue. His uncle, Samuel Adams, who was considered to be, well, one of the captains of the American Revolution, said this: neither the wisest constitution nor the wisest laws will secure the liberty and happiness of a people whose manners have become universally corrupt. He, therefore, is the truest friend to liberty of his country, who tries most to promote its virtue, and who, so far as his power and influence is extended, will not suffer a man to be chosen into any office of power and trust, who is not a wise and virtuous man. The sum of all is this: if we would most truly enjoy this gift of heaven, let us become a virtuous people. Notice no mention of values. The mention is of virtue. What's the difference between virtue and values? We want to talk about that here today on Viewpoint, and I'm so glad that you've joined us. It's conversation with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms, and in reality, friends, today as we talk about virtue versus values, we're really talking about the fulcrum of America's future. The fulcrum of America's future. The fulcrum is over which a lever, you see, goes back and forth, whether it be a teeter-totter or some other kind of lever. And this is the fulcrum of our future: virtue versus values. You see, men may talk about values without being virtuous, because values are very neutral. They're morally neutral. In fact, if we were to understand where this word values came into popularity, it came in the early 1970s. When I was a public school teacher in Southern California, they began to talk about values. Values this and values that, values education, and so on. We used to talk about virtues in American public education. But as of the late 1960s and early 1970s, a new conversation began to take place. It was all about values. Why? Why was there no more talk about virtue, but only values? It's because, friends, we were in the process of shifting as a culture from virtue to every man doing that which was right in his own eyes. In other words, removing any vestiges of morality from the public discussion, and everybody was able to choose their own values, you see. Virtue went out, values came in. But what are values anyway? And whose values are we talking about? You see, virtue actually has a definition. It's morally rightness. Righteousness, morally sound. Values? No. When you hear a politician say, our values, our values, our values, they purposely use that term in a deceptive way. How is it deceptive? Because they want you to believe that what they're talking about is your values, when in fact they're not talking about that at all. When they say our values, they're only talking about the values that they choose to espouse, or that their political friends choose to espouse, not the ones that you espouse. So the word values is a very, very deceptive term. So when one who is running for the presidency says, my values have not changed, it's a meaningless statement in a sense. On the other hand, it's not meaningless from her perspective, and that is, she still believes what she believed. She's making representations for political purposes that may change, but her values have not changed. It's very significant. So let's hear some brief words from Ms. Harris. She says her values have not changed, but what does that mean? Listen carefully.
You know, we have to stay woke. Like, everybody needs to be woke. And you can talk about if you're the wokest or woker, but just stay more woke than less woke.
The people who are convicted in prison, like the Boston Marathon bomber, on death row, people who are convicted of sexual assault, they should be able to vote?
I think we should have that conversation.
What would you do about the millions of, specifically, assault that are already in circulation? What do you do about those?
Well, there are approximately 5 million, to your point, Craig. We have to have a buyback program, and I support a mandatory buyback program. It is outdated. It is wrong-headed thinking to think that the only way you're going to get communities to be safe is to put more police officers on the street.
Paul also says, quote, every individual who is a resident of the United States is entitled to benefits for health care services under the sun. Not every individual is a citizen, but every individual who is a resident. So you support giving universal health care, Medicare for all, to people who are in this country illegally?
Let me just be very clear about this. I am opposed to any policy that would deny in our country any human being from access to public safety, public education, or public health, period.
To reiterate, you support the Medicare for All bill, I think, initially co-sponsored by Senator Bernie Sanders. You're also a co-sponsor on it. I believe it will totally eliminate private insurance. So for people out there who like their insurance, they don't get to keep it.
Let's eliminate all of that. Let's move on. How dare we speak Merry Christmas? How dare we? Debbie, I am radical. Is my values not changed?
Is it true, my friends, that her values have not changed? I hope you heard what she said. I hope you heard what she said. You see, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And she was in situations where she was being interviewed by liberal, non-Christian political liberals. So she felt free. She felt free to speak her mind, which her mind was her heart. And out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. She didn't speak about virtue. She spoke about her values. And she says, my values have not changed. We're going to talk about all of this, not just from the standpoint of Kamala Harris, but we're also going to talk about it from the standpoint, yes, of Donald J. Trump. We're going to be honest about this. Values versus virtue. Stay tuned.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. We're talking about the matter of virtue versus values. The whole values discussion came into popularity back in the early 1970s. It started in the public schools. That's where it had to be communicated so that our young people would no longer talk about what was right or what was wrong, what was morally right or morally wrong, but everyone had to form their own viewpoints, their own opinions about their values. In other words, to get rid of all sense of morality, all sense of authority with regard to what was right, what was wrong, what was good, what was honest, what was virtuous. Instead, everything had to be framed in terms of values. At the same time, another interesting thing was introduced in the public schools, and it all started in California. That's where it all started. So many of these things have started in California, and I was right in the epicenter of it because I was a public school teacher at this time for 9 years, and I watched it all happen in living color, technicolor, whatever you want to call it. And here's what happened. Along with the transfer from virtue to values came another change. And that was the training of teachers to no longer speak about truth or facts. No, we had to speak in terms of feelings. I feel, I feel, I feel. Now, so strong was this emphasis that we were told, mandated actually, to use our private time on the weekend to go to special indoctrination camps, so to speak. I remember one at Rancho Palos Verdes there in Southern California, taking a whole Saturday to be indoctrinated as to this new feeling talk. It was all part of what was more broadly called the encounter movement. We're going to encounter one another, and everything about it is going to be expressed in feelings. Well, believe it or not, that same spirit metastasized into our churches like wildfire. Christian psychologists and counselors began to pick up on the feeling, feeling, feeling business, and all of a sudden, moral truth and absolutes began to be vacated, even in the name of Christian counseling. Pastors began to pick up on it. And that's when the divorce crisis took over. And from there, everything else began to break down across America. Up till now, we have had a whole series of presidential candidates from that time on, many different ones. We had Richard Nixon, and then we had Bill Clinton, and we had Herbert Walker Bush, and we had Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, two terms of Barack Obama. We had Jimmy Carter. We had George W. Bush. Then we had Donald Trump. Then we had Joe Biden. And now we have a choice. We have another choice to be made. Some say that this election is the most important, most serious election in 2024 for the history of the country. In fact, that the very future of the country hinges on the choice that we make. But on what basis are we going to make the choice? Are we going to make it on the basis of our feelings or on the basis of our faith and facts? Are we going to overlook the facts and the declaration of values that have been made by either candidate and decide, well, we're going to vote for somebody that might make history, like the first woman or the first woman Democrat or whatever. Is that how we're going to vote? Well, it might be your value, but it has nothing to do with virtue. Because the only thing that has to do with virtue is who the person is, their character. Are they consistent in their character? Do they say what they mean? Do they mean what they say? Do they do what they say they're going to do? Or do they just talk? And is their talk deceptive? Is it truthful? All of those things we have to bear in mind as we look now for the next 2 months toward what many believe is the most essential, most important, most weighty presidential election in the history of the country. I'll leave that up to you to decide whether that is true or not. I'm not making a statement that it is. I'm saying that's what many people believe. In fact, most people believe that, I think. So here we have Kamala Harris wooing Christians with a cleric who is, as the headline says, just what you'd expect her to be. The Harris campaign is working hard to attract Christian vote. This has gone so far as to portray the candidate, who isn't exactly been known for her piety, as a woman of profound faith. Of course, you've never heard of her talk about her faith in Christ in the past. Kamala's life of public service, they say, is just a reflection of her faith in Christ. That's what evangelicals for Harris say. And the leftist intelligentsia, whose contempt for Christianity is abundantly documented, nods appropriately. So apparently, aware that it's St. Kamala might act not fly with the American people, the Harris camp has hired a cleric to convince Christians to vote for Harris and Walz. That person's name is Reverend Jennifer Butler, who founded a group called Faith in Public Life, which she says that is working to advance a, quote, moral imperative for a just, inclusive, and equitable country. But those who are used to the left's rhetorical tricks will spot the words inclusive and equitable as red flags. They don't mean fair and honest. They mean you have to include that which God says he hates as something to be treated as co-equal in the country. So, for the Harris-Walz camp, inclusive means that special preference is given to the less protected victim groups. And equitable means that you'd better have your checkbook ready to fork over your hard-earned money to the assortment of far-left folk, con artists, hacks, and faddists that President Joy thinks deserve the fruits of your labor more than you do. So, in a Wednesday interview this week with Religion News Service, Reverend Butler insists that she can be a bridge builder between patriotic and leftist Christians. For her, that seems to mean bringing Christians together around shared hatred of Donald Trump. She says, I also recognize we're at a pivotal moment in American democracy where faith voices for justice are needed now more than ever. Is that really what they're talking about, though? Now, we move from that to take a look at another aspect. That's what Kamala Harris is seeking to do. Then we have this. More than 200 former Bush, Romney, McCain staffers endorse Kamala Harris. Hundreds of Republicans who formerly worked on the presidential campaigns of the last three GOP nominees before President Donald Trump have endorsed his opponent, Kamala Harris. By an open letter that came out on Monday, they said, we reunite today, joined by new George H.W. Bush alumni, to reinforce our 2020 statements and jointly declare that we're voting for Vice President Kamala Harris and Governor Tim Walz this November. It was signed by almost 240 one-time campaign staffers to former President George W. Bush and the late John McCain and Senator Mitt Romney. All right. This requires some understanding. If you knew that these people who were formerly working for George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, John McCain, and Mitt Romney, if you knew that those presidents or presidential candidates were all globalists, would that make a difference to you? But that's not being revealed. You see, the real truth about why they're supporting Kamala Harris is not really stated. They have different values. What is their ultimate value? Globalism. They are willing to sacrifice the sovereignty of America in favor of moving our country into a new world order. That, my friends, is why George H.W. Bush, the father of George W. Bush, voted for Hillary Clinton when Clinton and Trump were running together in 2016. He voted for the Democrat. Why? Because Hillary Clinton and her husband are renowned globalists. Well, how about George W. Bush? He also is a globalist. The whole Bush family were globalists, going back to their father and grandfather, all globalists. Mitt Romney, also a globalist. John McCain, also a globalist. You see, the issue was not Republicans for Harris, it was globalists for Harris. Why? Because Kamala Harris is a globalist, just like Joe Biden was a consummate globalist. That should help you to understand then when we're talking about values versus virtue. But you see, globalism, that issue is a value issue, but it's not a virtue issue. That's a choice that they're making, and you have to decide whether you want to vote for a globalist and change America's identity and merge us with a new world order that Klaus Schwab with the World Economic Forum has set through the Great Reset for 2030, that the United Nations has set as Agenda 2030. In other words, within 6 years, we will become a part of a new world order. That, my friends, is the goal of the entire Democrat Party and many so-called Republicans. If you don't understand that, you're going to be very confused. So you have to make a choice. So let's talk a little bit more about, oh, by the way, on the other hand, Tulsi Gabbard, who is a former Democrat, lawmaker, congresswoman, has now endorsed Donald Trump's presidential campaign, describing the ex-president as the only candidate who can walk the U.S. back from the brink of nuclear war. That's her quote. She said she will do everything she can to send Donald Trump back to the White House. She was a 17-year National Guard veteran who served two combat tours in the Middle East and praised Trump's isolationist brand of foreign policy that was not going to lead us into world wars as the Democrat Party is so intent to do. She said, this is one of the main reasons why I'm committed to doing all that I can to send President Trump back to the White House. She said, I'm confident that his first task will be to walk us back from the brink of war. She said that the Democrat Party in 2022 had fallen under the complete control of an elitist cabal of warmongers and social justice ideologues. Now, that's one who was a leading Democrat and also ran for president, who is credited with actually ruining in a debate Kamala Harris and her campaign for president back in 2016. Now, we have a series of choices here. We have different viewpoints. Some of them reflect values, but we have not yet heard anything about virtues. We will talk about virtues when we get back, and they will ask a question. Can anyone who is a true follower of Jesus Christ vote for Harris? Or can anyone who is a true follower of Jesus Christ vote for Donald Trump? Where does it fall out? Virtues
versus
values.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
As we look toward 2024, and we have heard the words of Kamala Harris, my values have not changed, even though statements that she's making concerning the issues of our time seem to be totally the opposite of what she has been saying for the last many years. Could it be true that, in fact, her values have not changed, but she's just pandering to the American people to gain an election, knowing that she needs to say those things that have nothing to do with her values, but have everything to do with her motivation to gain the presidency? You see how slick this is? The word values means almost nothing, except to the person that's saying it. So when she says her values have not changed, she's not talking about your values. She's talking about her values, and her values have always been Marxist, always been Marxist. She was raised as a Marxist by Marxist parents. She has never shed that value orientation. But is Marxism a virtue? No. As a matter of fact, it was Karl Marx who said the religion is the opiate of the people. He mocked the whole idea of morality, which is the foundation for virtue. So, we're going to take a look for a few moments here at where virtue stands in our country and why it has historically been deemed to be at the very heart of the republic, at the very heart of the future of the country. So I want to ask you a question. When was the last time you heard someone use the word virtue? Have you ever used the word? Maybe not, very likely not. In fact, the word virtue has been out of favor in America during the same period of time that the words God-fearing man have been out of sync with American life. We lost the fear of the Lord and we lost our virtue. We abandoned virtue and substituted it with values. So, it seems that the word virtue has lost its place in American life and parlance. It became a disfavored word. It became like a virus, something to be avoided. Morally defined virtue was replaced by morally neutral values. But America was once known as the land of virtue. Believe it or not, our national symbols frequently included the word virtue. Virtue was an essential ingredient of the American way of life. In fact, it was the element that bound us together. Daniel Webster stated in 1830, quote, "Union we reached only by the discipline of our virtues in the severe school of adversity." So virtue was a necessary part of true liberty and independence. For that reason, it was spoken in concert with liberty and independence, even in the banners depicting all that was to define our aspirations for America. In fact, I have a license plate, I believe it's from Pennsylvania, that uses the phrase, weds independence and virtue as their state phrase. So virtue is not a plague, It's about moral goodness. It's about purity in heart and in motivation and intention. It's morally sound behavior. Virtuous behavior is that which seeks the best for those around us. It's not self-serving, but other-serving. Virtue is an outward display of inward character. So, if I would have virtue, I must be virtuous. If I would have morality, I must be moral. If I would have goodness, I must be good. Otherwise, I'm a hypocrite, right? Have we become a nation of hypocrites? So the light of American liberty and virtue has grown very dim, friends, unfortunately. America is quickly gaining a reputation throughout the world for vice rather than virtue. I want to share something with you that came from the 75th anniversary edition in 1992 of America's premier business magazine, Forbes magazine. 1992, that's when we began to form Save America Ministries. The Lord spoke to my heart in 1992. That's the moment that I told you about 15 years ago to speak to my church at large, whether they were here or whether they forbear, and carry that message from the church to cast new vision for the nation. That's what launched this radio program. So here's Forbes magazine, devoting its entire 75th anniversary edition, about a half an inch thick. It's amazing. I still have that magazine. It's called A Demoralized Society. All of the articles and editorials are focusing on whatever happened to virtue in America. So I want to share a few of the thoughts that came from that magazine. Moral concepts, still moral judgments, are understood to be somehow undemocratic now and unseemly. We pride ourselves on being liberated from such retrograde Victorian notions. Today, we've so completely rejected the Victorian ethos that we deliberately, systematically divorce morality from public policy. In the current climate of moral relativism and skepticism, it is thought improper to impose any moral conditions or requirements. We're now confronting the consequences of this policy of moral neutrality. We're discovering that economic and social aspects of these problems are inseparable from the moral and psychological ones. In fact, and having made the most determined effort to devise remedies that are value-free, we find that these policies imperil the material as well as the moral well-being of their intended beneficiaries, and not only of individuals, but of the society as a whole. In effect, we have demoralized American society. That, friends, was in 1992, over 30 years ago. Let that sink in. What we're experiencing is not something new. It's something that began a long time ago. And the secular writers of the book, The Day America Told the Truth, that came out in 1990, described America's lack of virtue replaced with values. And they said, for a fistful of dollars, we found that Americans would do almost anything. Lie, cheat, steal, murder, abandon their families, and change their religion. They said it's been said that an era comes to an end when its dreams are exhausted. Americans' dreams are wearing extremely thin, at least the kind of dreams that can sustain a great nation. Can you see perhaps why it's not just Democrat or Republican that we're talking about here, as we face a decision in November concerning our national election? It's about virtues versus values. Instead of talking about family values, everybody should be talking about virtues. But nobody wants to talk about it because virtue has been, in effect, a four-letter word. So, with that having been said, I want to make available to you my book, Renewing the Soul of America. If you want to have a window's eye view, a bird's eye view of what has happened in our country, how we got here, and how we get out of this mess, it begins with you and me. Renewing the Soul of America, one person at a time, beginning with you. And that's why 38 national Christian leaders endorsed this book. They saw it as radically different than any other book that had been written concerning the issues of our time. They saw it as having as a book having real answers, not just crying, not just wringing our hands, not just pointing the finger at this, that, or the other, but actually looking honestly at where each one of us fits in the bigger picture. It's an $18 book, yours for $15. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. Renewing the Soul of America. Don't you think we need that? If ever we did, we need it. It's on our website, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. I do not think you're going to be disappointed. This book has been quoted by pastors all over this country. It is inspirational. It's revelational, but it's inspirational. And it points the direction clearly for every single one of us, even as we read. As I read it myself, having written it, it speaks to me. It speaks to me. And it will speak to you as well. Renewing the Soul of America. One person at a time, beginning with you and me. Okay, now we move from there to take a look at, we've taken a look at Kamala Harris. We heard from Kamala Harris many statements that she has made concerning her values. Remember at the first interview, she said very clearly on CNN, my values have not changed. And she's right. Her values have not changed. But people are confused. How can she say her values have not changed when all of her so-called opinions and viewpoints have dramatically changed? Because they're just poured out there for public consumption, my friends. They're just poured out for public consumption. She feels like she has to say those things in order to become president so she can then carry out her real values. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, we're talking about the issue of values versus virtue. And we've laid out the distinction very clearly throughout the program here. Values have nothing to do with moral integrity. They have nothing to do with virtue They have everything basically to do with what a person wants to do, what they consider important in their own life. Regardless of morality, if they consider abortion something important to them, then that's their value. It's not moral. It's immoral from a biblical standpoint, but that's their value. All right. Now, we move to look at Mr. Trump. And you may be surprised at what we're about to hear, what you're about to hear here on the program today. But what's good for the goose is good for the gander, so to speak. And we're not here to promote the saviorhood of any particular candidate. We're here to try to be honest and deal with integrity, moral and virtuous integrity from a biblical viewpoint. It's not a Republican viewpoint. It's a biblical viewpoint, God's viewpoint. That's what we have to embrace. Remember, it's not by might nor by power, but my spirit, saith the Lord. We have to have that as our confidence. Now, a couple of months ago, Donald Trump spoke to a group of conservative Christians in Washington, and he said not to let the secular left silence and shame them in a bid to keep them from voting. Because he said, if you don't vote, your Christianity will be in tatters if the Biden-Harris agenda is reenacted. Your religion, your Christianity will be in tatters. Is he right? Or is he wrong? Well, their viewpoint, Biden and Harris, as expressed by their own words, reveals that they do not value a biblical perspective. In fact, they go against many very clearly expressed standards in the Bible in order to support a different set of values. Whether it has to do with abortion, whether it has to do with homosexuality, transgenderism, all of these kinds of issues, even the border. So now, anchor your seatbelt, friends, because our friend Michael Brown, Dr. Michael Brown, who in one area of the country actually airs a program immediately prior to this program. He is a friend of mine, a kingdom cohort, so to speak. He actually has endorsed my new book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. If you don't have it, you need to get it, by the way. It's on the website, saveus.org. But Michael Brown wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago asking the question, can a Christian vote clearly for Kamala Harris? He said, I cannot, he's talking about himself, I could not in clear conscience vote for Kamala Harris. But now he's taking up exactly the opposite issue. Can a vote for Trump be morally justified? He asks. This is a whole nother piece, and I want to share it with you because it's very honestly written. And it contains the very same kind of messages that we've been trying to get across here on this program. Because from my perspective, the issue that we're facing is the issue of trust. What do we truly trust? Who do we truly trust? Are we looking for a secular savior to deliver us from all of our troubles? Or are we just looking for the best possible person, given all of the issues that we're facing, the best possible person to stand in the gap until other issues develop? That's where the question comes. So, Michael Brown says, I devoted an entire chapter in my book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? He said, I wrote that book in 2020. Does character still count and does morality still matter? For years later, that question is still relevant, especially for Christian conservatives. They, or we, cannot possibly vote for Kamala Harris for a host of reasons. But can we in good conscience vote for Donald Trump? Yes. That's what we're going to focus on as we move forward in the last segment of the program here today. And I'm so glad that you've joined us. Again, get a copy of Renewing the Soul of America because it will help us move through these difficult waters. It puts us in the position of looking through a God-fearing lens, not a Democrat or Republican-fearing lens. $15, we'll put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. This is a message that we need for this moment. For this moment. There's a reason why 38 national Christian leaders endorsed it. They felt it was absolutely essential. And it's more essential today than the day they wrote their endorsements. So, Dr. Michael Brown writes, back in 1998, in response to the candidacy of Bill Clinton, the Southern Baptist Convention drafted a resolution in which it was stated clearly that the moral character matters to God and should matter to all citizens, especially God's people when choosing public leaders. By the way, our founders said just that. And the SBC resolution said to elect those officials and candidates who, although imperfect, demonstrate consistent honesty, moral purity, and the highest character. So how do we reconcile this, that standard, with our support for Trump, asked Dr. Michael Brown. Does he, although imperfect, demonstrate consistent honesty, moral purity, and the highest character? Hardly. So then, how could we justify or vote for him? Many have answered, we're electing a president, not a pastor. We're voting for a commander-in-chief, not a spiritual leader. And haven't we been known as values voters? What values would those be? Didn't we once call ourselves the majority, the moral majority? The SBC resolution stated that tolerance of serious wrong by leaders sears the conscience of the culture, spawns unrestrained immorality and lawlessness in the society, and surely results in God's judgment. So, have our own consciences become seared? He asks. Today, when concerned Christians point to President Trump's unquestionable or questionable morality, they're called legalists, short-sighted, religious, or worse. So what's happened to our moral convictions? So why then vote for Trump? Since we cannot vote for Kamala Harris, why then vote for Trump? We still believe that character counts and morality matters. But things have become so extreme in America that we have to elect a street fighter, someone who stands up for our cause, not just for our good, but for the good of the generations to come. In short, the battle we're fighting is an existential one, with our most fundamentalist liberties under attack. And many of us reason Donald Trump, with all his shortcomings, is the best man for the job. Or as Tucker Carlson said, if you're wondering why so many Christians have been willing to support this president despite his personal life, this is why. It's because whatever his flaws, he's made it clear that he's not the enemy of Christians. In fact, just the opposite. Talk about a betrayal of our values. Also reflected in the GOP's gutted 2024 platform, where the pro-life plank is virtually gone and all opposition to same-sex marriage has completely disappeared. And when Donald Trump just came out and said that he's going to be in support of reproductive rights. What's going on here? So Michael Brown says, how then can Christian conservatives justify their vote for Trump? Many would still argue that despite his caving in on some of the issues most important to us, and despite his many glaring character weaknesses, he will still do a better job on the economy, on securing our borders, on standing with Israel, on standing up to our internal enemies. And so overall, balancing out the pros and cons, Trump is still the better choice. But let's stop pretending, said Brown, that Trump is someone that he isn't. The cards are on the table for all of us to see. And by the way, that's what we're doing here on Viewpoint today. In the end, though, it may all come down to this. A vote for Trump is more than anything a vote against Harris. Now, why would that be important? Because Harris so blatantly supports everything that is contrary to the word, will, and ways of God as expressed in the Bible. She refuses to say clearly what she really believes. She seems to have no convictions and therefore cannot speak truth, because truth has to come from the inward person. So she just says, my values have not changed. So we can vote for Trump without being enamored of him, without being unrealistic in our expectations, by the way, and we should not be unrealistic. And if we do choose to vote for him, a choice that the vast majority of Christian conservatives will make, we must remember to keep our focus on Jesus and the gospel. To the extent that Trump's character deficiency are a negative example, we distance ourselves from those deficiencies. We can vote for him without becoming like him. It's a very excellent analysis article by Dr. Michael Brown. He is seeking to speak honestly into the life of we, the professing Christian people in our country, the church. Not covering over, not being political, just looking at things realistically from a biblical viewpoint. Not glossing over the sins or errors or virtuousness or lack of virtue in anybody, but looking at things honestly. That's what we need, isn't it? That's what we really need. Honesty in the inward part. Ain't nobody perfect, my friends, including you and including me. Virtues have morphed into values to camouflage our hypocrisy. Changing the terminology from virtue to value eliminates the stigma of a moral stand for behavior, thus seemingly freeing us to do what we want rather than what we ought. It was not until the present century that morality became so thoroughly relativized and subjectivized that virtues ceased to be virtues and become values. The true test of our character, in other words, will require more than applauding politicians and passing resolutions. In the end, it's not the laws we pass, but the lives that you and I lead. Again, get a copy of the book, Renewing the Salt of America. $15 will put the $18 book in your hands. It's on the website, saveus.org. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. It's our best-selling book of all time. I hope you'll be encouraged by it, even as we look toward a couple of months down the road at an election. I think it'll help you to sort things out. Now, become a partner. Send your gifts by faith, friends, to Save America Ministries. Don't wait for somebody else to do it. We're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.